Hello, and thank you for joining us for another value-packed Tenant Cloud podcast. My name is Chris Pflugi, and I will be your host in today's podcast. Today, we're going to cover the important topic of what is an illegal eviction and what the consequences of illegal evictions are. First and foremost, I want to say thank you for joining us with this podcast and taking the time out of your busy day. My hope is that you will take away valuable information that will help you to be a better landlord and better property manager and do things that will help you to increase your portfolio, reduce your bottom line, and increase your top line revenue, and just become a better property management company or landlord in general. So without further ado, we're going to jump right in and we are going to talk about these illegal evictions, which have, over the past year and a half, there seems to have been an increase in the number of these taking place, and it has caused concern even in the government when reviewing the data on some of these illegal evictions that are taking place across the country. And it's interesting to note that there are approximately 3.6 million legal eviction filings that occur annually. And housing experts believe that the actual number of evictions is far greater than 3.6 million simply due to how many illegal evictions take place each year. And the COVID pandemic only made things a lot worse. In fact, you may have seen it in the news, but there was a landlord who I believe kidnapped his tenant, tied him up, and put him in like a field somewhere while he proceeded to change the locks, remove belongings from the property, and the whole nine yards. And it was a big story, ended up all over the news. And needless to say, that was not the proper way to go about it. That was a very clear issue of an illegal eviction. So, but that's, you don't have to go that extreme to be for it to be an illegal eviction. Illegal evictions might look something like, in some states, not all states, keep in mind some states, some of these things may still be legal. And so because this is a podcast that's listened to on a national level, it's important to know that some things are legal and some things are not. There's inconsistencies across the states because each state regulates these things separately. And that's also important to note because on the federal level, there have been proposed bills recently, including the Eviction Crisis Act of 2019, which didn't go anywhere, but it was something that was discussed and it did make the news. And other similar bills have come across committees within Congress that have been considered for being voted on. And a lot of these bills are designed to kind of streamline it and standardize this on a national level so that the system is not as inconsistent from state to state. So, but an illegal eviction in a lot of states looks something like changing the rental unit's locks when the tenant is out of the unit. And so when they come home, they can't get back into the unit. That's called a lockout. In some states, that is still a legal action. Usually it's used for collecting rent that is owed and that's past due. And usually it's significant rent. Usually it's not something that it's not a tactic that a property manager or landlord uses in the event that the person just owes $50. It usually has to be an extreme scenario, though it is often abused. And in states where it's legal, you typically can change the lock. If the tenant isn't home, you can change the lock. And when they come home, they can't open the door. But then a lot of areas also have a requirement that if the tenant calls you, you have to come back and let them into the apartment. The entire goal of that, doing that, is typically designed to get the tenant to at least communicate with the office or the landlord. In the event that they have been avoiding notices, they have not been paying anything towards the past due balance, and so on and so forth. And so, but in a lot of states, that is completely illegal. In fact, some city ordinances also have made that illegal to do that. So that is what an illegal eviction might look like in some areas. Other ones might be something like turning off utilities to the unit. And again, this is something that a lot of states and cities have started cracking down on, especially in the heat of the summer and the cold of the winter. Turning off someone's heat or turning off someone's AC is potentially life-threatening. And so a lot of cities and states no longer allow that, though that was a common practice back in the day before it was made illegal in many places. And so that would be another example of an illegal eviction. You're essentially attempting to use the circumstances and the environment of the apartment or the rental to drive the person out of there because it's no longer livable. And so that is often considered an illegal eviction. Another example might be removing the renter's belongings when you have not gone through the proper court process. And so if you go into a rental when somebody is not there and you take all of their belongings, you are essentially doing something like a repossession of belongings that you didn't lend to the person. There was no loan in place. There's no agreement in place between you and them in terms of those belongings other than the rental in which they are sitting. And again, in some areas, in some states, this is still a legal practice. But in a lot of states and cities, it is not. And so that would be considered another form of an illegal eviction. And there's plenty of other examples of illegal evictions, such as removing the front door, which is another extreme method of basically making a rental uninhabitable, because then obviously the rental is subject to burglaries and it's just not safe, and insects and animals and the whole nine yards can get into the rental. And so, again, that is considered in many states and cities now a more barbaric eviction process. And in most places, that's no longer an option for landlords. And so those are all examples of illegal evictions. It's when you go outside of the court system to try to remedy an issue of unpaid rent or other issues with the tenant, such as violations of the lease, or it's just some landlords who want the rental back and they know that they won't be able to win in court. And so they take these actions to try to get possession of the unit illegally. And so none of those are recommended methods of doing evictions. In fact, none of the methods that go outside of the court system are recommended by pretty much any real estate professional or real estate advisors and consultants out there any longer. Even if it is a legal option according to your current state and city laws, simply because of the complications, and many times there are certain things that have to happen in a very specific order. Just like when you deal with evictions that do go through the court process, there's a very set system in place on how you have to go about doing that thing, such as posting a legal notice on the person's door or sending it via certified mail or even handing it to them in person, and other methods and steps in the process that are required in order to go through an eviction process. And so with COVID and with people losing jobs and income and things of that nature having an impact on delinquency rates, and a lot of landlords are becoming desperate to get possession of their rental, a lot of these things can land you in very hot water, and some of them might even land you in criminal water and certainly civil litigation for sure, as a lot of states that if a landlord does these things, there are consequences. And so what are the consequences of an illegal eviction? Well, in some states, the tenant is, if something like this happens and it's illegal in their state, the tenant can actually sue the landlord for many months of rent and actual damages. And sometimes they can sue for both. Sometimes they can sue for whichever is greater. And even if there are damages in the rental that were caused by the tenant, but if you've done one of these illegal eviction processes, the tenant can actually get their entire security deposit back. They don't have to pay rent. And in California, for instance, the renter can sue for the cost of all damages plus $100 per day of the violation. And that could be a substantial sum of money depending on how long that process that you took to conduct an illegal eviction actually took. So if you took possession of it illegally and you had it for 30 or 60 or 90 days, That is a lot of money that you will end up owing to the tenant as a result of that illegal eviction. And so it's important that not only are you aware of what an illegal eviction is, but also what the consequences of an illegal eviction are. And it's important to know in your specific state and your specific city what those permissions for evictions are in your area, and not to make a misstep and go through the process illegally. And the best way to avoid that is to simply go through the eviction process every single time through the court system. And there's situations in some states, for instance, in the state of Texas, where if rent is unpaid and the rental appears to be vacant, meaning it appears that the tenant no longer has any belongings in there, the food is rotting in the fridge, there's no pets in the house, they haven't been there for days, and you post an abandonment notice on the door, and it gives them like 3 or 5 days to respond to that abandonment notice, then you can take possession back over the apartment. But even in those circumstances, it's often recommended that you still go file an eviction in court just to make sure that you are not taking possession back of a unit that you mistakenly took for an abandoned unit, which in fact is not. Maybe the person just went on a very long vacation, or maybe they're stranded somewhere and you go through the court process, and in somewhere in that process they do end up getting a notice from the court because the court's able to track them down, and they show up at court and they're like, yeah, no, I'm still here, I'm still a tenant. So it's important that you go through the court process every single time that you need to go through an eviction process with the tenant. And so there are also ways that you can avoid having to even go through the eviction process in general. And some of those things, especially now, a lot of landlords have adapted different methods for kind of a workaround with all of the policies that have taken place and the ordinances and temporary laws that have been put into place, such as the CDC and the federal eviction moratorium for federally insured loans. And some of those things are, for instance, some landlords have started only doing month-to-month rental agreements. What that means is you, instead of not being able to evict somebody for past due rent, you can evict somebody as a holdover because you only provided a month-to-month rental agreement, and as a result of that rental agreement having expired and you gave them a notice saying that the next month it wasn't going to renew or whatever it is in your state, then the person is now a holdover. It doesn't have to be due to unpaid rent. And so that's a workaround that some landlords are attempting to use to circumvent the new laws and temporary things that have been put in place by the government to prevent evictions simply due to unpaid rent because of COVID and the difficulties that tenants have had as a result of the policies and not being able to go to work or having reduced hours, etc., being impacted by COVID. And so month-to-month rental agreements have increasingly become a go-to option for a lot of landlords for specifically that reason. Another one that a lot of landlords are using is to make sure that you're doing proper screening and having more strict qualification criteria for your tenants. And so maybe your income requirement was prior to 2020, maybe it was you had to make 2.5 times the amount of rent in order to qualify for your rental. And now landlords are saying, well, now I want it to be 3.5 or 4 times the amount of the monthly rental that you have to make in income. And again, that's not possible in all areas simply because the rental, you may never rent out your rental property if it's in an area that you're wanting to charge $1,000 and you're requiring $4,000 in rental income in order to qualify for it. Well, that you may never find a tenant because somebody earning $4,000 may not even be considering to live in the area that your rental is in. And so, but there's other ways to do stricter qualification criteria outside of just income requirements. And the other option that a lot of people are going with is simply requiring higher deposit requirements. And so in the event that there is a situation where a tenant does cause damages or the tenant does stop paying rent, then you can start charging a higher deposit requirement for your rentals. And so in many places, such as Texas, the standard deposit amount in most rentals is equal to 1 month's rent. And some require even larger amounts of deposits. And again, this isn't possible in all areas because, again, some states and cities have restrictions against how much you can actually charge for a deposit. And so, but it is something that a lot of landlords have implemented as a part of tightening the qualification criteria and the requirements for getting into their rental, especially when it is smaller landlords who manage single family home rentals or duplexes or fourplexes and aren't really involved in the multifamily rental industry. And so those are some ways that landlords have used to try to avoid even having to go through an eviction process down the road to begin with. Because if you can avoid the eviction process entirely, obviously that is the most ideal situation because nobody wants to go through an eviction process. You don't want to have to lose that rental income. You want to keep that steady stream of revenue coming in for your rental. And so an eviction process obviously just throws all of that out the window. And so taking those steps early on in the process, proper screening, stricter qualification criteria, higher deposit requirements, and in some areas, landlords have been able to implement a month-to-month rental agreement as opposed to a long-term 12, 16, 18, 24-month agreement and to bypass the restrictions for past due rent. And so it is important to note that none of the information in this podcast is by any means legal advice. And so definitely recommend that you check with your city, state, and local ordinances, as well as you want to make sure that you are abiding according to the federal requirements as it pertains to eviction processes, especially right now during the COVID pandemic and all of the laws and things that have been passed to protect tenants in rental properties that have been affected by COVID. So hope that this information was of value to you and provided some insight into preventing evictions down the road. And hopefully you have been using Tenant Cloud to do those screenings and to have those rental agreements in place and collecting deposits and rent and making things easier for your tenants to pay rent online and just managing your rentals more efficiently in general. And I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this podcast, and we will look forward to talking with you next time.